friends, it's Ken Carmen.
And Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
So to talk about the Newsom and Flacco trades, obviously we can get into Myles Garrett and in the season he's having of Sumer Sports on the Fan Hotline. Lindsay Rhodes joins us right now. Lindsay, welcome to the show.
Hi. Always got to go back to Myles Garrett, huh?
Well, yes. People haven't forgotten, but it turns out it aged very well for you.
Yes.
Okie doke.
You are the are the seer among seers. You're the prognosticator on this show because you were seeing it when no one else would, Lindsay.
That's hilarious. Well, I didn't see this trade coming. I think this is a fascinating trade. No, like you don't. I'm talking about the Campbell trade now. I feel like these are the types of trades that you don't really see that frequently in football. We're so used to seeing like a good guy at this position go for a different guy at a different position. It's not that often that you see like a straight corner for corner or, you know, like what's happening here? What's the evaluation that's different? But so I think it's a really fascinating one to dive into.
Well, did you think the Browns got the better end of this, or are you looking at this and saying, how did they get better here?
No, I think when you really look at it, there's definitely an argument to make that both sides maybe won for their different purposes. I think that from a Browns standpoint, I think it's clear that they're thinking about the future. I mean, you don't even need to look at this trade to know that that's the case. I think, you know, Greg Newsom's up for a new deal. He's going to be a free agent. There's uncertainty that goes along with that. Would they be able to bring him back? Did they want to? So this trade takes that uncertainty out of the mix and adds a cornerback that's already under contract. I mean, so it's one less thing that they have to allocate resources towards in the offseason. My guess is that there's also a bit of an evaluation gap on these two cornerbacks to a degree also. My guess is that Cleveland probably thinks there isn't as much difference between the two as maybe the Jags do. And I also think that the Browns are going to use him differently than the Jaguars did. The Jags are in zone coverage at the sixth highest rate, and the Browns are the 25th highest rate. So I think some of the ways in which you might see people dinging Campbell for his play this year, those sometimes are showing up in zone coverage, and I don't think that will be as much of an issue in Cleveland. So I think that for a lot of different reasons, it's easy to look at this and say, okay, like, you know, if we take the Jaguars and what they got out of it, put that completely aside, I think you could make an argument this was a very smart move on the Browns' part.
Lindsay Rhodes on the Fan Hotline there of Sumer Sports. So some fans are wondering, you mentioned, you know, thinking about the future. We're 5 weeks into the season. Does that equate to the Browns could be on the verge of tanking?
I don't know if I mean... How do I say this nicely? How do you figure out if they are? Like, to a degree, like, you would have to take some defensive pieces off the board, right, in order to make it egregious and obvious that that's what you're doing. I think, to a degree, you are playing a lot of young pieces, and with the idea that you're trying to get better as an offense in particular. But I think you could probably lose a lot of games even while trying to develop properly, if that makes sense. So I think, you know, you've got the two first-round picks. You've got the most draft capital in the entire league going into next year. I think that there's no doubt, even coming into the season, in a perfect world where Joe Flacco played well and he did not play well, but even in a perfect world, this is not a year that the Browns are going to go to the Super Bowl. You know, your best hope at the start of the season is that the Browns will be competitive. And so you started the year thinking about next year. And so I don't necessarily know that it's like that you could fully call it a tank. I think that it is, you're certainly rebuilding on offense. There's things that you want to glean from some of the younger players. Obviously, Gabriel's play will be evaluated the rest of the way, and you'll gain a lot of information about what you have in him, and be able to make decisions about what you want to do moving forward. It feels like the fact that they were able to trade Flacco and actually get a pick back is like chef's kiss. I mean, congratulations to Cleveland for being able to pull that off. I think what they're doing here is just collecting a bunch of lower round picks that they can probably package to move up in the draft to acquire depth. It feels like, you know, the Rams are a great example in the last few years of a team that just flipped a defense like so quickly. And my guess is, looking at the Browns, that they're probably trying to take a similar approach with the offense. And it sounds like they have the draft capital to do that. And so, you know, it's a good offensive tackle draft. There are some good wide receivers there. And then with those low round picks, you can just kind of just gather up a bunch of different people that you can put in camp and say, go compete. And, you know, darts at a dartboard increases the chance that some of them are going to hit. And so I think that you'll probably be looking at a better Browns team next year than this year. And that's always the goal.
Two trades this week. What does your brain tell you is going to happen with trades moving forward?
Well, I mean, we're still a ways out from the trade deadline, which is the other fascinating part of this. Like, it's, I mean, this is an aside, but it just feels like this whole time of year has gotten so much more fun in the last few years. And I think it's driven by a lot of the younger general managers who are sometimes a little bit more into analytics and less like beholden to think that those draft picks are gold and they never want to part with them. They're like, they're playing chess out there and it's super fun. And so I think if stuff comes up where there's an opportunity to move a few more pieces or pick up a couple of more draft picks without really dramatically downgrading the play on the field this year in a way that would impact them in the future, right? Like I think that this cornerback trade is a perfect example of a way that you can kind of move some pieces around on the board without it actually hurting you on the field. I don't think that this is necessarily, like I said earlier, a downgrade at corner. I think it's just a way to maybe fill a hole that you would leave behind by taking Newsom out of the defense, but also not in a way like you're this guy Campbell has a deal for the next few years. So you're signing on for him to be your cornerback. That's a big position, right? And so I think that if there are moves that come up in the next few weeks that are similar to this one, where you can move things around in a way that doesn't hurt your chances down the road, then I wouldn't be surprised if they don't do that.
Lindsay, 6 years in, who do you think has done a better job? Kevin Stefanski at his job or Andrew Berry at his?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a really good question. I think both of them have played with one hand behind their back for a good majority of this time, to be honest with you. And that might not be the answer that people want to hear in Cleveland, but I feel like the whole Deshaun Watson thing just makes the evaluation of both of those people so hard. And maybe I would argue it has made it harder for Berry because of the capital that was sent away, the amount of financial resources that were invested in Watson. And when that doesn't go well, and I think what I'm essentially saying here is that I believe that there's evidence that points to maybe it wasn't 100% their call that they made this move with Watson. I think we have good reason to believe that, and that's why they've been given a few years post-Watson to kind of figure this out, despite the fact that they haven't had success on the field. I think there's a concession a little bit that's like, this isn't your fault. I'm going to give you time to figure your way out of this mess. So I think it makes that evaluation pretty hard. I might lean towards Berry a little bit.
Lindsay, are the Steelers good?
That feels like such a loaded question. My short answer is going to be no. I think that they are probably, I view them as a team that is probably going to be exactly what they have been for the last few years, which Steelers fans hate, which is a team that hovers right around 500, ends up just above 500, isn't really a team that can make a push in the playoffs. I don't see any reason to believe that they are not that. I think the thing that data tells you about aging quarterbacks is that the average depth of target comes down. He has, Aaron Rodgers, the lowest average depth of target in the entire NFL right now. His average depth of target is 5.
So, oh, wow, lower than Joe's was when he was here for the 4 weeks.
it's wild. So, so when that starts to happen, zooming out in terms of older quarterbacks, one of the trends that we see is that one of two things happen, and it's not always both. It's either the average depth of target comes down because the arm just can't do what it once did, but you want to keep the accuracy up, and so you lower the A-dot. And then every once in a while, they can throw it downfield and make a big play, but you're not asking them to do that frequently. Or the average depth of target stays up where it's always been, and they're still slinging it. This was Peyton Manning at the end. He was still slinging it, but his accuracy was all over the place, and his completion percentage over expected tanked that last year that he was on the field. So there's one of two things usually comes down. And in the case of Aaron Rodgers, it's been the average depth of target. I just don't see a way that you're going to get through the rest of the season knowing that they have to somewhat keep it close to the line and not find defenses that can go, I know exactly what to do against this. And so I tend to think that, no, they're not particularly good. Like I said, I think we're probably looking at a 500 or slightly above 500 team there.
Lindsay, is the AFC really this wide open, or by the end of the season, is it going to be the same 4, 5, 6 players that it always is?
That's a tricky one. I think one of the biggest stories this year so far has been the AFC South, right? Like, yeah, I mean, the fact that you've got Indy and you've got Jacksonville and then honestly, to a degree, Houston, which I think we all assume is going to be in the mix. Indy has, I think, scoring differential, and there's no doubt that early in the season, smaller sample size that will widen out. Their strength of schedule has not been the hardest in the league, but for the last few weeks, they've played some pretty good teams, and they've continued to stay competitive in a way where I think you have to sort of take them seriously, or more seriously than maybe we did through 3 weeks. But they're number one in the league in scoring differential. They have outscored their opponents by 74 points. Number two in the AFC in that category is Houston, sitting in the 9 seed right now at 2-3 with a plus 47 scoring differential. And then you've got Jacksonville at plus 27 in the 5 seed right now. Like, that's the biggest surprise of the year. We thought that division was trash coming into the year. And so the fact that Indianapolis has found a way, in particular, I think, to be as competitive as they have, and they've done what they've done with Daniel Jones. The other story of the year, I think, has been the veteran quarterbacks and the bucket that he belongs to in that category, just really exceeding expectations. Daniel Jones, Baker Mayfield, and Sam Darnold are 1, 2, and 4 in total EPA on the season. And I think all of them are kind of putting together a really interesting story of the retread quarterback, you know, being something that we might need to look into a little bit more deeply. But so I do think that the Chiefs, I am not comfortable writing them off regardless. They're going to get Rashee Rice back, and I think that their schedule in the early going has been really tough. The Ravens' schedule in the early going has been wild. My concern with them is that they're sitting at 1-4, and they've got a game against.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen
and Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
The Rams coming up this year, I mean this week. And I just think there's a strong possibility, especially if Lamar's not on the field, which it looks like he's not going to be, that they're 1-5. I just don't know if that's too deep of a hole, even though the schedule eases up for them after this week. I don't know if that's too deep a hole to dig yourselves out of. So I think the schedule makers and then obviously the injuries that they suffered on top of that did them absolutely no favors.
Lindsay, great stuff as always. See, we didn't mention Myles Garrett one more time, except right then when I mentioned it.
I'm going to let us end on that. He's all right, good.
All right, so we're going to put the headline here.
He's good.
Lindsey Rhodes says, bleep that contract, still trade Miles.
You're so in depth with your analysis and everything, we could just do Lindsey thinks Miles is good at football.
Yeah. If we were friends, that's what we would do.
Boil it down to the simplest possible analysis.
Why
you could have.
Why do you have that stupid chick on? No duh.
Lindsey, great stuff. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
Lindsey Rhodes, Sumer Sports on the Fan Hotline.
I view them as a team that is probably going to be exactly what they have been for the last few years, which Steelers fans hate, which is a team that hovers right around 500, ends up just above 500, isn't really a team that can make a push in the playoffs. I don't see any reason to believe that they are not that. I think the thing that data tells you about aging quarterbacks is that the average depth of target comes down. He has, Aaron Rodgers, the lowest average depth of target in the entire NFL right now. His average depth of target is 5. I just don't see a way that you're going to get through the rest of the season knowing that they have to somewhat keep it close to the line and not find defenses that can go, I know exactly what to do against this. And so I tend to think that, no, they're not particularly good.
That was Lindsey Rhodes of Sumer Sports in the previous segment, and I think she's right now. I also look at the Steelers defense and think, I think the Steelers defense is better than it's played through the first four games.
It has to be better.
I also think their schedule lightens up here in a minute because they play the Browns. And I also actually do think like the offense has subsided in a couple big plays here and there. I actually think the offense has room to grow as well. I think in watching Rodgers looks better already through four games than I thought Russell Wilson looked through his first four games last year when he came. What was that? Because I remember Fields had his moment at the start of the season.
Yeah, and then it was the final 10 games, if memory serves me right. Right. So like, after week 6, I want to say.
Like, Russ had like one good game right out of the shoot, and then the final 9 games happened. I think I'm not talking about stats. I'm talking about like looks better throwing the ball, looks more comfortable. I think the Steelers are 3-1, and it wouldn't surprise me. Health is a big thing. The early buys another.
I mean, I thought Lindsey made a great point, though. And it's not one. Listen, have I caught every snap of Aaron Rodgers this year? No, but I have watched a substantial amount of these Steelers games. And I didn't realize, like, I looked at the numbers for the Minnesota game. This is a game I watch. I have an actual thought on top of this within that, and I didn't realize 3.3 yards average depth of target. Like we've criticized the idea that Joe Flacco was shackled. Joe Flacco was wearing these golden handcuffs and wasn't able to be Joe Flacco. The early returns right now with Aaron Rodgers in Pittsburgh, whether it's because he can't make the throws or whether they're doing something with Arthur Smith to tell him not to make the throws, he's not throwing the ball at all of any sort of length down the field.
So I do think that this is Arthur Smith. Why? I don't know. I think it might be as simple of it's early. Let's let the offense take time to germinate, and let's see if we can just kind of stay competitive. And as the season goes, then we'll develop the offense.
Well, so I think people look at what happened in Minnesota, for instance. I think it's a great game to look at because you look at the final numbers and you're like, whoa, Rodgers completed 81% of his passes.
Yeah.
Like, that's enticing to people, you know? You're like, what, 81%? That's an insanely high number. And then when Lindsey brings you on, you kind of find out why there's just that large number attached to it. And I'm sure if you watch the game, you could tell that as well. But if I'm Arthur Smith, I'm 3-1. I have had success with Aaron Rodgers doing it. I don't think it's the way you should operate with Aaron Rodgers, but I bet they buy 100% into it and continue to do it.
So I think this is tricky because the line on this game on Sunday is only 5.5 points.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's Vegas telling you that they think this game might be more competitive than you think.
So one thing into that, though, is that Tomlin plays games close anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's, to me, that was a reflection of how the Steelers typically play these games anyway.
And I actually think this game, I'd be surprised if it's a blowout, it's going to be a real cause for concern. Like, I don't think the Steelers are who they're going to be 5 weeks from now. I think this is the typical Tomlin team that kind of mills around for a while and then suddenly finds its place. Last year was a little different because they had the offense just fell all the way apart. I actually think this is going to harken back to the vintage teen Tomlin teams, where it's like, well, they're 6-2, but they don't really look good. Mm-hmm. And then the final 9 games looked really damn good. I think that's what this team's shaping up to be.
I don't know. I guess time will tell on it. I haven't been convinced the entire time that they're anything special, but it's interesting just watching. I told you I listened to Aaron Rodgers yesterday. And he kept talking about these tight ends as if they were the world's greatest. At one point, he said, it's the best pair of tight ends I've ever played with in the NFL. He's talking about Freiermuth and Jonnu Smith, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, all right. And then, so I looked at it. I'm like, well, what kind of numbers do they have? The two collectively have 150 yards this season.
Yeah.
Like they haven't done anything.
I think Mike Tomlin's war crime has been on tight ends, because Freiermuth is way better than his stats say.
I've always thought Freiermuth is a good football player.
Didn't Jonnu Smith put up like 800 yards last year or something?
Yeah,
like
Rodgers is like, this is the best set of tight ends I've ever played with in my career. And this is, and if you've listened enough to Rodgers, he's so pedantic, and he's just increasingly annoying about little details. But he doesn't just straight up lie in these things. Like, he genuinely does believe it. And I'm just not seeing the evidence there. But it's a combination right now. The offense looks fine, and the defense looks fine. And right now, that's good enough to be 3-1.
And I'm certain the defense is going to be better.
I should be
certain about that, even though they're a little bit older. The offense, I think, is going to be better. I just don't know how good it's going to be. I just think, I think comparing it to the last couple of years is rough, because I still think Aaron has more in the tank than washed Russ does, and certainly their quarterback situation from the year prior.
I agree with that. Like, I there's no part of me that thinks Aaron Rodgers can't play football better than Russell Wilson did last year.
Here's the crazy thing about it, though. I actually think the Browns can win this game.
I don't know why not.
Yeah. I mean, if you can get
this Aaron, is going to be a close game.
It should be. And if it's not, it means all the things we were concerned about this year when it came to things like trading Joe Flacco, what message that send to locker room, the Newsom trade. If Pittsburgh blows you out, it's not because I think the Steelers are every bit as good as their record says. I think it's going to be because you destabilized where this team is.
No, we've all watched enough Steelers games to know it's just not how Tomlin operates. Tomlin gets ahead, and then Tomlin finds ways to let the other team back into it.
We call that a
consistently does that, but he always wins.
Worse Harbaugh.
No, but he still, yeah, he still Harbaugh always wins. Loses him. That's the difference. And Stefanski's been doing that this year too, where he lets teams back into it, and then they end up winning. Tomlin's difference is that he lets teams back into it. They make stupid mistakes and stupid things happen, but he still always pulls out the win.
216-474-0092. Are the Steelers good? Maybe the other way of saying it is, are the Steelers as good as their record states they are? I don't think they're playing that level of football. But I actually think that's more concerning. I think when you can win and you're not playing good football, and specifically the defense has a much higher standard that's expected of them, as everybody else gets better, I think you can slingshot even better if you just continue doing what you're doing and have a modicum of health.
Yeah. I agree with your sentiment, though. I do think this weekend's going to be close. Which is odd, because there's not much enthusiasm around this Browns team.
Yeah.
This is not the week to come off being like, hey, let's wave the pom-poms. But it's just how these games go with Tomlin.
If they hadn't just done two trades that I think can be destabilizers, I might be thinking about pulling out the old G word again.
Which has now become like just a thing around the station.
What do you mean?
Well, you had the G word before I left.
Yeah.
And when I do not say the G word anymore, I'm not sure.
Well, no. I only pull it out when I mean it.
And then I saw Lima had the G word was used at one point as well while I was gone. I think the G word was used with Lima.
I was riding my coattails on the G
word. I didn't know
word.
If we were just kind of like all taking turns using the G, if it was the season of the G word.
I think imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. They saw me get the guarantee that Green Bay would, the double guarantee that Green Bay would win.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they were like, that sounds like it tastes pretty good. I think I want a slice.
Well, I wasn't sure then if it was like, is Jake Molnick going to do the guarantee tonight? Are we just going to continue to have people go down until we have guarantees from everybody? Is that what's going
to
happen?
I mean, if they want to, they can, but there's only one guarantee king here.
Is the trend going to be, or
he's
don't
the
worry,
burger bet king.
I won't step on your guarantees.
I know you won't. I know you won't. Some of these other rabble rousers. Let's get to quick hits, including Shedeur Sanders on his readiness in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen
and Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
Pete Futek coming up in 40 minutes. Nick Wilson, Jonathan Peterlin back on Afternoon Drive. Greg Newsom, he gone. So is Joe Flacco. The Browns making two trades this week. More on the what the Browns are doing with Myles Garrett and what people are accusing the Guardians are doing with Jose Ramirez. But let's go ahead and get to quick hits.
From the latest news and rumors around the sports world,
Angel.
To the sound bites you need to hear,
hurry.
It's quick hits.
Well, Shador Sanders, remember him?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He spoke to the media today about his role with the team.
We're going to make sure we do everything we can to make sure Dylan's ready for the games. Each and every day, even when Joe isn't starting everything, prepare the right way and be ready to know that you can get out there at any point in time. So I'm overly confident within myself. I know when I first got here, I'm ready to play. But it's up to the coaches and whatever decision they make, then fine with.
So this is multiple times in multiple weeks. Shador has said what I think is the only thing you can say, which is I'm ready to play and I believe in that, but I trust the coaches, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
As the Shador honk on the station, any concern that Shador is getting impatient?
No, I loved hearing it. He needs to keep talking the way that he's talking, where he's telling everyone, I'm ready to play. So when they continue to put out the message, well, he's just not ready, we just don't see it with him, Shador does things like he did today and does things like he did last week, where he tells them, not only am I ready to play, I could be a starting quarterback in this league tomorrow. I know I'm ready to play. This is the right mentality by Shador. He needs to keep this mentality. Don't let him break you.
I just like when people are like, there's been a criticism of, you don't need to say you're ready to play. If you're ready to play, you'll play. It's like, if he said anything other than, I know I'm ready to play, people would lose their mind about that too. Because anything the kid says, people lose their damn mind.
But I think people want him just to fall in line and to just be like, well, if that's what the coach says, then I guess I'll put my head down, I'll get back to work, and I'll make sure that I do the job necessary to prove to Stefanski that I'm ready to play. It's like, he's like, screw that nonsense. I'm ready to play. Like, I can do this right now. And by the way, that is a subtle way of him saying, I don't appreciate you continuously putting it out there that I'm not ready to play, because clearly I believe I am ready.
That's a fair amount of editorializing from you. Somebody's fired up.
In the right way, mind you. I don't even know what that meant at the end there. It just kind of felt good to me. All right. Also, I don't know if this feels good or not either. Actually, I thought this got awkward. I don't know if you watched any of the Fox post game yesterday after the Blue Jays took down the Yankees. That series ends, but it's Big Poppy on there. It's Derek Jeter. It's Alex Rodriguez. And they get to interview Vladimir Guerrero. And this is how it went down.
The Yankee lose. The Yankee lose. Let's go, baby. Let's go. Hey, let's do it again. The Yankee lose. One more. The Yankee lose.
It's still funny to me, but Big Poppy just didn't. Vlad Guerrero Jr. was excited to do it the first time.
Yep.
And then he kept doing it because he just beat the Yankees. It's a good time. They've done a lot of trolling of the Yankees this series.
Yep.
And Big Poppy just kept going for it.
Was Jeter
they
and
were both
A-Rod?
There. Yeah, they're both there. And they're both, they both look pretty, what's going on right now?
See,
A-Rod took it in good stride. Jeter didn't.
Oh, that's, well, no, that kind of makes
Jeter
sense.
Jeter took it like exactly the
A-Rod,
way that you think.
A-Rod is fake. Even if it bugged him, he wouldn't let you know.
And A-Rod, he smiled and the way Jeter that you're supposed to in that moment. Jeter just seems like he's just a jerk. There's just no other way to put it.
Yep.
Jeter stinks.
Yeah, he really
I
is.
Hate it because I like Jeter. I liked him as a player. Yeah, Jeets. Like, there's a lot of fun Jeter stuff, but he just kind of stinks.
We also say his analysis, while not
the
just...
gift baskets, all of it. I loved it all.
While not just lacking personality... analysis ain't great either.
It doesn't have to be. It's like Tom Brady, though. Anything he says, people elevate to a higher order, and it doesn't have to be.
This is where Big Poppy, it gets it. It is about, you know, entertaining people, and that's what Jeets just will never get.
Yeah, as Big Poppy just... Listen, it was funny to me. I liked how much fun Big Poppy was having, but Vlad was, like, uncomfortable, and it was just one of those things. The trolling that's gone on in this series, though, the Blue Jays have swerved into it in a beautiful
start
way.
Start spreading the news. Schneider, well done,
yeah,
sir.
Yeah, very good.
Omaha! Bucks quarterback Baker Mayfield, remember him, mm-hmm. Commented on the changing perceptions people have of him.
I told you guys that I try and not get too high, not get too low, which is something that I was not doing early on in my career. But, you know, early on in my career, yeah, it's looked as cocky, immature. Now it's moxie. He's a dog. So it's same different day. Just as long as you play well, they change the narrative. But you just got to be yourself. And I've always been like that.
So did Baker actually like mature, or are we seeing? What do you make of this answer?
Well, I mean, he's not wrong.
No, he's not. But I think it's funny that he went for
the narrative. Does change
when he was playing well. Yeah. He was, you know, hey, you know, I have changed a lot since Cleveland, and now he's like, bleep that narrative. I'm the same damn guy.
I don't think. I mean, in that. The whole stretch of the way, I didn't buy what he was trying to sell off in that regard, because I think we've just been around Baker long enough to know. I think he's gotten more mature. I do believe that to be true, but I also think what he said is right. He can get away with a lot more now. You know, that video of him jawing with the fans before the game is getting underway, if he did that in Cleveland, people would rake him through the coals. People would look at him like, well, this is why you can't be a franchise quarterback. But when you're winning and you're playing good football, people look at it as moxie. He's not wrong.
This is mean. Halloween's coming up. We're gonna dress like we're from Home Alone again. Are we going to do that? Are we going to do the three different facial hair days of Baker Mayfield? Can we bring it back?
I got blocked by Baker on Twitter for that moment, by the way, when he dressed up like he was in Home Alone.
And you were like a Baker stan.
I know. I was very in with Baker's camp, too, at the time, which is odd enough that then that was what got me blocked. But yeah, it was a dark time right there. I pointed. Well, I just wanted him not to dress like he. Don't wear a white tee to the press conference. I love Baker. Right. Don't wear a white tee to the press conference.
Where's your criticism?
Act like you've been to a press conference.
Where's your criticism
before?
From Miles, who we get to see sweatpants and all of Miles on any given day?
No. This is first off, and I would not criticize that only because it's in his locker room, by the way, during the week. I'm talking at the podium after the game ended. That's when that went down.
Doesn't Miles go to the podium shirtless?
Not after games. Not after games, okay. He doesn't. He does it during the week when you go into the locker room in his own environment. And Njoku's never been shirtless as far as I can recall. Not that I have like great recall for David Njoku's shirtless memories.
Seems like you like, might.
I've never seen him go to the podium, but the big podium after the game. Now, maybe in his locker room after the game, different story. But quarterbacks go to the big podium. Coaches go to the big podium. You don't wear a Hanes t-shirt that costs you $7 there. You got to at least do something.
It was very trendy. It was actually like a $15 shirt.
I know you want me to turn into a don't wear backwards hat guy is what you want me to turn into.
Your boy Colin Coward.
But it was an innocent tweet too, was the other thing. It was just like a bold choice for the starting quarterback to wear a Hanes $7 t-shirt to the press conference. That got me blocked.
And then the good Lord decided to pair you with the sloppiest dresser at 92.3 The Fan.
Well, and I was
some
doing
are calling that karma.
At the time, if you remember correctly, and I don't know why you would, I was doing a 6 degrees of Baker Mayfield bit where I was trying to get as close to Baker Mayfield on the air as I possibly could. So every single week on Sunday, I would have somebody that was close. So I started off with his barber, and then I went to his the guy that batted fourth on his high school baseball team as Baker batted third that was now playing minor league baseball, and I was inching closer and closer and closer, and I had it lined up to then end with Emily Mayfield, and it was like all good to go, and then I had that stupid Hanes tweet and it was gone. Yep.
You touched greatness.
And that's when Baker,
and here you are.
He knows the defense I had of him. It's all right. No defense here for Juan Thornhill. He was on with Cam Hayward's podcast, Not Just Football, and he was asked. Now, listen, he plays for the Steelers now. I don't know that it's shocking that this is his response, but he was asked, TJ Watt, Myles Garrett, who's the better player? Here we go.
I think it's like a little bit of a rivalry going on, like within just them two, not even just Cleveland and Pittsburgh. It's like they both are going to try to like outperform one another. I'm not going to lie to you, Myles is a hell of a player. He's a guy that's going to be tough to stop. Then same on the other side, TJ is just like a guy you got to stay away from. Like he's always in the right spot at the right time.
So you're just saying TJ is better?
I'm going with TJ.
I want to say this is something, but even in the descriptor I had leading up into it, he can't say Myles Garrett in this moment.
Like, yes, he can.
You can't.
Yes, he can.
Why?
Because
how?
He's played with both of them. You could have a pair on you. You could have a set on you.
Yeah, he doesn't have that set. Maybe he does. I don't want to speak about Juan Thornhill's
set. He does when he's trolling people on social media. He's a big boy there. Now he's afraid of yinzers?
It's stupid. It would be very stupid if he came out and said Myles Garrett.
Or be honest. And that's one thing I don't think Juan is.
I think he would be if his career was done and he asked him this question. When you ask him this question when he plays with TJ Watt, the obvious answer
is he afraid of Wawa Watt?
I just think, why would you disrupt a member of your defense? And because you think TJ Watt's going to take that responsibly? Like, you got to know who you're dealing with.
I think part of
TJ Watt is going to take that in good graces.
This is another
Except
case
yourself,
of
TJ Watt. He gets upset about
if
this
Watt
takes umbrage all the way to JJ
to being. Oh my gosh, that just annoys me. Like, again, if I was a 2-time Defensive Player of the Year award with countless money, I've got generational money. After football's done, I'm going into Canton, and I'm got a great life. I can have just about any woman I want. Like, why would you care if somebody says, "Hey, that other guy who's also generational with generational wealth going to Canton is better than you"? That's just such. TJ is just so damn soft. He's such a baby.
He is. That's why Juan couldn't be honest in this moment,
because he can't stand up to him because he's also soft. Oh.
He just doesn't want to disrupt the locker room right now because he knows TJ is going to go right to his locker room and be like, "You said what about me?"
Juan's thorns looking a little small these days. Ain't got stones.
Juan's thorns.
It's Thornhill.
I know. I got it. Yeah. I got it.
Now, it's thorn. I'll just explain it off air what his thorn is.
That's no explanation needed.
All right.
We all got
it. So when a man and a woman.
Yeah.
When a man and a woman, when they love each other.
Yes. Okay. Did they use their thorn? Is that what you're suggesting?
You're not going to out-freak this freak, okay?
I think you know they do. Because you're a proud papa, too.
I have evidence twice over that we've done the deed. Only
Let's
twice,
take care
though.
Of your schmeckle.
It's true.
Consider Jose Ramirez, then consider Myles Garrett, and your entire perspective should change. That's in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen.
And Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.